Assalamu alaikum. Welcome back to Islamic History Exclusive. This is the podcast exclusively for Patreon subscribers of the Islamic History Podcast. And in this episode, this will actually be the final episode of Mukhtar's Rebellion. This is part 6 of Mukhtar's Rebellion, which is actually episode 16 of the overall Ibn Zubayr series. So before we get into the meat of the show, let's get a recap of where we are so far. In the previous episode, we discussed the Battle of Harura. We mentioned how Ibn Zubayr had appointed his brother Mus'ab ibn Zubayr as the new governor of Basra. Mus'ab ibn Zubayr then led a combined force of Basra and angry Ashraf from Kufa. Mus'ab's forces engaged with Mukhtar's forces at a village just outside of Kufa called Harura, which is where the name of the battle comes from. Mus'ab's forces are victorious and they defeat Mukhtar and many of Mukhtar's forces, who were mostly, many of whom were former slaves and Mawali, plural for Mawla. They were slaughtered and killed by Mus'ab's men, who show no mercy and just chase down and really hunt down the fleeing Shiites. Mukhtar, however, and his remaining forces, they retreat back into Kufa and barricade themselves inside Dar al-Imara, which is near Kufa's market. And of course, Dar al-Imara means the house of command, or more appropriately, the governor's house. So the Mukhtar inside of Dar al-Imara, a long siege began. Mus'ab ibn Zubayr, he positioned his army between Dar al-Imara and the market of Kufa. As we mentioned, Dar al-Imara was close to the market. Mus'ab ibn Zubayr, he wanted to cut off any provisions from reaching Mukhtar. He almost certainly expected Mukhtar to have provisions within the Dar al-Imara, within the building. But at some point in time, that would run out, and he just wanted to wait him out. At first, as the siege was going on, the wives of Mukhtar's men, they were able to smuggle food into Dar al-Imara, but eventually Mus'ab ibn Zubayr, he learned about that and he began intercepting the women as they brought food to Mukhtar's men. And as the siege dragged on, the people of Kufa also turned against Mukhtar and they began chasing away anyone who came near Dar al-Imara to help Mukhtar. They will throw stones or filthy water out the buildings on anyone approaching Dar al-Imara. Presumably, these were buildings that had more than one story. And so as people would try to sneak into Dar al-Imara, somebody would throw dirty water. Oh, Lord knows what kind of stuff was in that water on them, chasing them away. Also, Mus'ab had archers positioned in the surrounding buildings. And so if any of Mukhtar's men ventured out or poked their head out, they would suddenly start shooting arrows at them and chase them right back into the building. Every now and then, while the siege was dragging out, every now and then, Mukhtar's men would launch some desperate attempt to break through the siege. But each time, they were not able to inflict any real damage and had to rush back into the building. And they were not able to do any good. So the siege lasted for about 4 months. And within the building, within Dar al-Imara, Mukhtar knew he was defeated. But even though he was defeated, he still had to give himself some sort of justification or some sort of, I don't know, maybe glorification about his accomplishments. He compared himself to the other Arab leaders of that time during this period of confusion and chaos in the Muslim world. He mentioned how Marwan ibn al-Hakam had taken Syria, how Ibn Zubayr had taken the Hijaz, how the Khawarij had taken Yamama, which is in Central Arabia, how Muhallab had taken Isfahan, how Ibn Khazim had taken Khorasan. We mentioned all these stories in the past. He said he had done just as much as these guys did. He had taken Iraq. Only difference between him and these other guys, according to Mukhtar, was that he managed to not just take land for himself, establish his own dominion, but he also got revenge for Hussein ibn Ali and for the events at Karbala, where everybody else was just standing still and fighting each other. So that's what he said to justify his actions. But despite all that, morale was getting pretty low inside of Dar al-Imara. Eventually, the provisions that Mukhtar had stockpiled began to run out, and the men were getting weaker and weaker as Musab's siege tightened on Dar al-Imara, and it was getting more and more difficult for people to smuggle food and provisions inside of the building. Mukhtar realized this. He saw that his men were getting weaker, and he wanted to make one last stand before it was too late, before they were too weak to even stand up and defend themselves. However, most of his men were too demoralized and were already too weak for that. The Persian Mawali, who was still with him, they had completely lost faith in Mukhtar, and they had said that this time he has lied because Mukhtar had promised them victory, but they could see that victory was not forthcoming, and so they said, this time he lied to us. Mukhtar, however, he of course chose to fight until the death. He said that there's no escaping death. Death is going to come to us no matter what. And that if he is going to die, he would rather die like his commander, Ibn Shumayt, who had been killed at the Battle of Harura. So Mukhtar, he left the palace with 19 of his most loyal followers. And while the others, they opted to stay inside of Dar al-Imara and surrender to Musab and wait for his judgment. And Mukhtar absolutely disliked this decision of theirs. He was very upset with them for this. So he was arguing with his followers who decided to surrender to Musab. He tried to encourage them to join him in this final last stand, saying that the Ashraf, who were with Musab, they wanted vengeance. They weren't trying to be merciful or get any. He has seen what they did to the Mawla at the Battle of Harud and how they were so brutal. He's saying that these guys wanted vengeance, and they were not going to let any of them go free. He said that if they surrendered to Musab, then they would basically die in a humiliating way by execution. Whereas if they went out with him, at least they could die with honor in battle. Or if they got lucky, they might just escape and then get back to their people, who would then be able to protect them. However, only a few of Mukhtar's followers agreed with him, and Mukhtar wound up leaving with only 19 followers. The rest decided to wait inside the building and surrender. So as Mukhtar and his 19 followers, as they left Dar al-Imara, he sent a message to Musab ibn Zubair asking for a safe passage if he simply left Kufa and never returned. Musab, of course, refused, insisting that Mukhtar would have to submit to his judgment, whatever that would be. But Mukhtar, of course, refused to put his life in Musab's hands. And so with that, Mukhtar and his 19 men, they grabbed their swords and they rushed into the fray, and they fought against Musab ibn Zubair's men until they were cut down and killed. So with Mukhtar dead, Musab had his head cut off and then nailed it to the outside of the Masjid of Kufa. Meanwhile, the other Shiites inside of Dar al-Imara, they surrendered to Musab, and they were ultimately let out and brought before Musab for his judgment. Well, as soon as the surviving Shiites were brought out, they immediately regretted not following Mukhtar's advice. You can just try to imagine the dread and the shame that they felt as they were led out of Dar al-Imara with their hands tied behind their back past the rows and rows of Musab's soldiers. Many of them were Ashraf, just hungry for revenge. Yeah, they really regretted not doing what Mukhtar had suggested they do. Anyway, so they're brought before Musab, and they began to plead with Musab for lenience. They begin to beg him for mercy. They asked for forgiveness. They recited verses of the Quran about mercy, and they reminded Musab that they are all brothers in Islam. Some of them even offered to be put in the front lines in the upcoming fight against the Umayyads. Everybody knew the Umayyads were going to try again. They say, just put us in the front lines and send us to fight the Umayyads. We'll fight on your behalf against them and let us take the brunt of the blow against the Umayyads. But the Ashura from Kufa weren't having any of that. They were bloodthirsty for revenge. And so they all demanded to be given one of the Shiites, claiming some sort of blood vengeance, some sort of blood debt that the Shiites owed to them. Whenever Musab seemed to be leaning towards mercy or leniency, they would demand their vengeance and he would ultimately relent. So whenever they saw him getting kind of soft towards the Shiites, as Shiite or Shiite begged for forgiveness, begged for their lives, the Ashraf would say things like, "They killed my father. They killed 500 of my tribesmen. Are you going to set them free? Choose them or choose us?" And so each and every time, Musab would choose the Ashraf of Kufa. Now, the Basrans, the people from Basra who had joined Musab's army, they were very upset about the Musab's judgment, as he ordered for all of these men to be killed, all of these beheadings. And they scolded him, and they really were upset with him. They scolded him for killing so many Muslims who had put their lives in his hands. They had accepted his judgment. They came out to him, and he had the opportunity to be merciful, but instead he was harsh. And many of those people who were killed, many of them had never been in any battle until the Battle of Haruda. Many of them were just foolish young men who got wrapped up in this movement at the wrong time. And so they reminded Musab ibn Zubair that he was going to have to stand before Allah when he would need mercy, and he would have to explain why he did what he did. Well, after the combatants at Darul Imara were taken care of, most of them were killed. I don't think any of them were spared. I didn't read about any of them being spared. I'm pretty sure all of them were killed. Musab then sent his men off into Kufa to find all those people who had supported Mukhtar. And so Musab's men went scouring through Kufa, dragging those people who had supported Mukhtar. This is somewhat reminiscent of when Mukhtar went sending people throughout Kufa, finding those who were responsible for Karbala. Anyway, so they're brought before Musab. And at first, Musab, he wants to spare the Arabs and just kill the Persians. And of course, most of the Persians were Mawla. But when he suggested doing this, one of his men, probably one of those from Basra, they criticized him, saying that, "What kind of religion is this? We're going to go around killing just the Persians, we're going to spare the Arabs, and they're both worshiping the same Lord. They both follow the same religion. What kind of religion is this?" And so Musab realized the fallacy of that thinking, and he decided to kill everybody. So everyone who followed Mukhtar, Arab and Mawla, they were all executed. There may have been a few people, I think a few people were set free, but the vast majority of them were killed. But in Musab's decisions to kill the Arabs along with the Mawla, that had its own problems, because that turned many of the Arab families in Kufa against Musab ibn Zubair and his brother Abdullah ibn Zubair down in Mecca. So in this whole purge of Mukhtar supporters, about 700 Arabs were killed and about 6,000 Persians were killed, all told. Kufa has definitely seen a lot of violence in these past few years. Then Musab, he then goes on to call for Mukhtar's two wives. He has them brought before him and he asks them, "What is their opinion of Mukhtar?" One of Mukhtar's wives says, "We say about him whatever you say about him." And so when she said that, she was let go. The other wife, however, her name was Amra bint Nu'man. Amra bint Nu'man was the daughter of the Sahaba Nu'man ibn Bashir. Nu'man ibn Bashir has narrated several hadiths. Do a Google search for his name, you'll find a whole bunch of hadiths with his name in the chain of narrations. One of the most famous hadith that he narrated was Muslims are like one body. This is not a perfect interpretation, but Muslims are like one body. If the eye is sore, the whole body is sore. I'm sure many of you are familiar with that hadith. So they ask Amra the same question. What is her opinion of Mukhtar? She replies that he was one of Allah's righteous servants. When she says this, she is imprisoned. Musab then, he wrote to his brother Ibn Zubair about her. And Musab says in his letter to Ibn Zubair that she claimed that Mukhtar was a prophet. She didn't quite say that. She just said that he was one of Allah's righteous servants. That could be taken, I guess, you know, in the Quran, Allah does describe his prophets as his righteous servants, but that's a very broad term to pretty much anyone who is a believing, faithful, and righteous Muslim. But Musab instead said that she claimed that Mukhtar was a prophet, even though I don't believe Mukhtar ever claimed to be a prophet. Mukhtar had his faults, by all means, but Mukhtar would have never claimed to be a prophet. The Shiites would have never followed Mukhtar had he claimed to be a prophet. Mukhtar, however, did claim to have knowledge of the unseen. As we mentioned, I think in the last episode, his claim to have knowledge of the unseen, that started the rumor that he claimed to be a prophet. He was claiming prophethood for himself, which didn't do anything for his reputation. But nowhere that I have ever seen did Mukhtar ever claim to be a prophet. And once again, it would have been very foolish of him to do that, because the Shiites would not have followed him had he said that. They would have definitely turned against him if he said that he was a prophet. Instead, he was just said to be representing the family of Ali ibn Abi Talib. Anyway, so Ibn Zubair, down in Mecca, he receives his brother's letter. And once he reads that Mukhtar's wife is saying that he was a prophet, Ibn Zubair orders his brother Musab to execute Amra bint Nu'man, which he did. And this was really controversial, to execute the daughter of a beloved Sahaba, even though, yes, Musab himself was a son of a beloved Sahaba. Still, this was just a little bit too far to execute a woman like this. So, the family of Nu'man ibn Bashir, they didn't rise up against Musab, but they were very upset with him. They turned against Musab ibn Zubair. They insisted that she was a believing Muslim. And it seems as if, I don't know if Musab's writing in that letter, if this was intentional to try to get his brother to order her execution, or if it was just bad, I don't want to say bad translation because they're all speaking Arabic, but maybe it was just bad transmission of the facts. Maybe Musab didn't, perhaps Musab wrote what he thought she was saying, or what he thought she meant, when she didn't really believe that. Allah knows best. Whatever the case may be, between Musab ibn Zubair and Abdullah ibn Zubair, they're responsible for the execution of a daughter of a Sahaba who may very well have been a righteous Muslim woman. Well, Musab's reputation definitely took a hit from all of this killing. All these people that he killed really solidified his reputation as a heartless, brutal murderer. Musab once met Ibn Umar several days after, I believe it was during one of the pilgrimages. Musab went down to Mecca and he ran into Ibn Umar. These are, of course, two sons of two famous Sahaba. Ibn Umar, the son of Umar ibn Khattab, and Musab ibn Zubair, the son of Zubair ibn Awam. So Musab meets Ibn Umar in Mecca, and Ibn Umar immediately begins to chastise him for all the killing he did in Kufa. And remember, Ibn Umar had been married to Mukhtar's sister. We mentioned how Ibn Umar had interceded for Mukhtar a couple of times in the past. It's not that Ibn Umar necessarily supported Mukhtar. He certainly did not. But Ibn Umar was someone who always would lean towards mercy and peace. And of all of these Sahabas that are running around right now, not all of them are Sahabas, so all of these Muslims who are running around claiming leadership right now, Ibn Umar seemed to exhibit the reputation closest to Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And I bring up, well, I have an analysis for Mus'ab ibn Zubayr at the end of the show, so I'll bring that up later. I was about to give you some analysis, but I'll bring that up later. So Mus'ab, when Ibn Umar chastises him, and Ibn Umar accuses Mus'ab of killing 7,000 people in one day, Mus'ab defended himself by saying that the people he killed were disbelievers and they were liars. Ibn Umar then replied to that and said that if you had killed 7,000 sheep in one day, it would have been too much. So what can you say about killing 7,000 people? What can you say about killing 7,000 Muslims in one day? So that's it for Mus'ab's reputation. And we're going to see how this Mus'ab's actions in Kufa come back in the future. So one last thing before we wrap up. Actually, two last things. First is Ibrahim al-Ashtar. We mentioned he had been Mukhtar's right-hand man, but they had had a falling out. Ibrahim al-Ashtar was Mukhtar's governor of Mosul, but after the falling out, they kind of have gone their separate ways, and Ibrahim al-Ashtar had built himself up a nice little dominion in Mosul, whereas Mukhtar was relegated to Kufa. However, with Mukhtar gone, Ibrahim al-Ashtar is in sole control and sole command of Mosul. And he begins to receive messages from both sides. He's stuck in the middle, by the way. Mosul is right in the middle between, it's in modern day Iraq right now. But at this period of time, it's kind of like on considering the border of Iraq and Syria. So on one side, he has the Umayyads in Syria. And on the other side, he has the Zubayrids in Iraq, which is basically Kufa and Basra. So they're both sending him messages, both Abdulaziz, Abdul Malik ibn Marwan in Syria, and Mus'ab ibn Zubair in Kufa. They're both sending him messages, asking him to join their side, and both of them promise that he can remain in charge of Mosul if they join their side against the other. Ibrahim al-Ashtar has a decision to make, but ultimately he chooses to side with Mus'ab ibn Zubair. His reasoning is that if he were to join the Umayyads, he would have to fight against Kufa, which is now under control of Ibn Zubair. He would have to fight against Kufa, which is actually his hometown. We mentioned how Ibrahim al-Ashtar had actually helped Mukhtar overthrow Ibn Zubair's governor of Kufa. So if Ibrahim al-Ashtar joined the Umayyads, had to fight against Kufa, and it would be very likely he would wind up fighting against his own kin or people who he was very friendly with, people who were part of his family or his extended clan. So he didn't want to do that. Also, he did not feel comfortable joining the Umayyads after he had killed one of their top commanders, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, at the Battle of Qazir. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad was one of the Umayyad's staunchest supporters, and he probably still had a lot of supporters in the Umayyad ranks. It just didn't really feel comfortable with him. So he ultimately chose to side with Ibn Zubair. And I believe we mentioned in the previous episode that he had probably ultimately intended to do that. All right, some final analysis before we wrap up on this episode. If you go back to the conquest of Mecca during our series on the Sirah and the life of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, we mentioned how when the Prophet conquered Mecca, the many of the Quraysh came to Prophet Muhammad asking for forgiveness, and even some of those who had done some really bad things, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam forgave all of them. I mean, there's nobody who came to the Prophet and asked for his mercy, his forgiveness, and he didn't forgive them. And some of them had done some really bad things. Now, I mean, we don't have to get all the details, but I mean, it's amazing how Prophet Muhammad, he was able to basically just let people go who had done, for instance, Hind, who had basically killed his uncle Hamza and eaten a part of his liver. I mean, the Prophet forgave her. I mean, it's so many of the things. There's so many stories of it. It's just really upsetting to see that Ibn Zubair and his brother Mus'ab couldn't do the same thing for other Muslims. And this episode here, when I'm doing my research for this one, this kind of sort of changed my opinion of Ibn Zubayr a little bit. I'll say altered it. Ibn Zubayr is often seen as a hero by a lot of modern Muslims. He's seen as someone who fought against hereditary rule in the caliphate. He was someone who stood up against the kingmakers of the Umayyads. And that whole thing about being against hereditary rule, that was part of his initial reasoning for rising up, or at least opposing Yazid ibn Muawiyah. So he was a Sahaba and gives him a lot of credibility, but at the same time, so was Marwan ibn Hakam, who he was fighting against. He was also a Sahaba. So ultimately, Ibn Zubayr is often seen as a hero by a lot of people. I was really shocked at the brutality that Mus'ab ibn Zubayr displayed in Kufa. Now, I can understand in the battle, you know, during battle, people do vicious things. People do brutal things. But the siege lasted for 4 months. The siege of Kufa at the Darul Imara Kufa, that lasted for 4 months. After that, their bloodlust should have gone down. After that, and he still ordered the deaths of thousands of Muslims, and one of them included was the daughter of a Sahaba, and he did all this without even a trial. You know, he just ordered, you know, summary executions of thousands of Muslims. I mean, that is absolutely inexcusable. Month after the battle had ended, bloodlust should have been gone down. Mus'ab ibn Zubayr didn't take the high road in that respect. Now, you could say that Ibn Zubayr in Mecca, Abdullah ibn Zubayr, may not have been directly responsible for his brother's actions in Kufa. But Ibn Zubayr is the leader. You know, the buck stops with him. You know, so Ibn Zubayr, those thousands of people he killed, he could have used them in his fight against the Khawarij or against the Umayyads. So even from a strategic point of view, it wasn't a good idea, because in killing all these people, he now turned a good chunk of Kufa against him. And, you know, if I'm having these feelings, you know, hundreds of years later, I can imagine how people right then had, how they felt about Mus'ab and Ibn Zubayr's actions at this time. And I'm not trying to say that Ibn Zubayr is 100% wrong. You know, it's really hard to pass judgment on people 1,400 years later after it happened. But I'm not so quick to give Ibn Zubayr the title of hero in this conflict. That's my thing. When all these battles that happened, all this conflict and chaos between Muslims, then and now, but particularly talking about way back then, now we got to look at this whole thing with a little bit of nuance. We just can't label Ibn Zubayr as 100% noble and the Umayyads as 100% evil. You know, it just isn't that simple. It's a very complicated and complex matter. And I got to say, I probably fell into that same trap. And the more I read about history, the more I learn that, you know, there really is no black and white, with the exception of Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. I have no problem with Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and the early companions and the early caliphate. That's all good. But after that period of time, all this confusion, all the civil war and fighting, you know, I'm less willing to give anyone 100% pass or anything, and try to look at the big picture and try to notice that all of these people who are fighting and killing, you know, they're no perfect people. That's the thing. They make some very bad mistakes from both a strategic and a religious perspective. That's all I really got to say about Ibn Zubayr as far as this episode is concerned. But we have many more episodes to go through with Ibn Zubayr and his caliphate, or his attempt at a caliphate. It wasn't a full caliphate, but his attempt at building a caliphate. This is the last episode, however, of the Mukhtar series. That is pretty much over. So in the next episode, inshallah, we're going to go back to Ibn Zubayr and his struggle and the difficulty he has with his family as the governors in Iraq. We're also going to discuss the return of the Khawarij. They're not quite done yet. We're going to discuss the return of the Khawarij as they plan more attacks on Ibn Zubayr's territory in Iraq and Persia. But that's next time on Islamic History Exclusive. And until then, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.